Poets of the Restoration is a program of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
The poetic gift was something Eliza Roxy Snow was born with. In her family, the talents and aptitudes of mind and spirit were encouraged and cultivated. As a young girl, Eliza from time to time even wrote her school assignments, not in prose, but in rhyme. Born on January 21, 1804, in Beckett, Massachusetts, to Oliver and Rosetta Pettibone Snow, she came of noble patriot stock, both grandfathers having fought in the Revolutionary War. When she was scarcely 2 years old, her parents moved their family to the new pioneering area of northeastern Ohio. It is here that Eliza's girlhood took place. Eliza's first poem was published in the Ravenna, Ohio, Western Courier in August of 1825, when she was but 21 years old. Her fourth printed poem, requested by the editors of the Courier, was addressed to the memory of the great patriots Adams and Jefferson, who died within hours of one another on July 4, 1826, which day marked the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We quote a sampling of lines.
What bold presumption for my untaught muse! Oh, for a muse by heaven inspired to sing in strains appropriate the mournful theme! What shock has nature felt that should produce such strange vibrations, such responsive sounds? Hark! 'Tis the death bell. Mark its solemn tone. Columbia mourns. She mourns her patriot sons. Her sages have beheld her 50th year. The supple willow shade their funeral pile. Fair gems of honor sparkle o'er their deeds.
Although the publication of this poem brought Eliza a considerable amount of local fame, she still continued serving as secretary to her father, who was county commissioner and justice of the peace. And for a time, Eliza also taught school. Nor did she neglect the womanly duties her mother taught her, cooking, cleaning, and needlework, occasionally earning money with her skills as a seamstress. Indeed, as Susie Young Gates later wrote of Eliza, to relieve the tensions of too much study, she embroidered. She was an exquisite needlewoman. However, between 1826 and 1832, over 20 of her poems were published, some under pen names, not always her own, in the pages of Western Courier and the Ohio Star. But a change of momentous proportions was about to take place in her life, reflected in one of the last poems she wrote before coming into contact with the restored gospel. Years later, she altered the verse so that it was more in keeping with the truths she had learned. Perhaps a creative premonition prompted the penning of these lines.
Human life, what is it? I've seen the shadow passing by when past its being time was o'er. I've seen the pointed arrow fly, 'twas found no more. I've seen the tender, lovely flower dismantled of its modest hue. I've seen the pine majestic tower and perish too. I've seen the pride of life decay and destined to an early grave. I've seen the aged fade away and none could save. Just such is life, 'tis but a dream, and all it seems a trifling jest. There's naught but fancy's childish gleam to be possessed. But lo, a shining seraph comes. Hark, 'tis the voice of sacred truth. He smiles, and on his visage blooms eternal youth. He speaks of things before untold, reveals what men and angels knew. The secret pages now unfold to human view.
Eliza's parents were confirmed Baptists, but they welcomed political and religious thinkers of many persuasions into their home. One of these was Sidney Rigdon. Another was Joseph Smith. It is interesting to read Eliza's first impressions of the prophet.
In the autumn of 1829, I heard of Joseph Smith as a prophet to whom the Lord was speaking from the heavens, and that a sacred record containing a history of the origin of the Aborigines of America was unearthed. A prophet of God, the voice of God revealing to man, as in former dispensations, this was what my soul had hungered for. But could it possibly be true? I considered it a hoax, too good to be true. In the winter of 1830 and 31, Joseph Smith called at my father's home. As he sat warming himself, I scrutinized his face as closely as I could without attracting his attention, and decided that his was an honest face. My adopted motto, "Prove all things and hold fast to that which is good," prompted me to investigation, as incredulous as I was.
Eliza's mother and sister had been baptized earlier. Now her own investigation led to conversion and a burning testimony.
The Spirit bore witness to me of the truth. My heart was fixed. On the 5th of April, 1835, I was baptized by a Mormon elder. And in the evening of that day, I realized the baptism of the Spirit as sensibly as I did that of the water in the stream.
From that day on, Eliza Snow's life was inexorably bound to the life and progress of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In the spring of 1836, Eliza moved to Kirtland, where she taught a select school for young ladies while boarding at the Prophet's house. She returned briefly to her home, but she knew it would be for the last time. She expresses her feelings about this departure in a poem entitled "The Parting," from which we quote.
Farewell, farewell, I leave you. The time is drawing nigh when I shall witness sceneries beneath a distant sky. And when I gaze upon them in all their summer pride, they'll seem to speak of days gone by when thou wert by my side. The carriage now is ready and waiting at the door. Farewell. Farewell, we're parting now, perhaps to meet no more.
Teaching in the Prophet's household again, Eliza learned to honor and appreciate both the gentle and powerful qualities of this man who had been called and anointed of God. She donated money for the building of the temple and involved herself enthusiastically in the joys and struggles of the Mormon people. The Prophet Joseph literally appointed her to write poems to and on the behalf of the Latter-day Saints. Now, until her last breath, she would go forth fearlessly and tirelessly in this great individual calling given her. As stated in the complete poetry of Eliza R. Snow, she would chronicle her people's history, broadcast their beliefs, and speak in their defense. During the next 3 years, she published over 40 poems. When the Kirtland Temple was dedicated on the 27th of March, 1836, remarkable spiritual manifestations took place. The Savior appeared in several meetings. Many of the saints experienced visions or saw the choirs of angels atop the temple and a pillar of fire resting on the temple roof. Eliza wrote of this time,
"The ceremonies of that dedication may be rehearsed, but no mortal language can describe the heavenly manifestations of that memorable day. Angels appeared to some, while a sense of divine presence was realized by all present, and each heart was filled with joy inexpressible and full of glory."
Persecution again began to rage, and there was apostasy among the saints. But Eliza stood amidst the turmoil, unmoved. She took her place in Far West Missouri when she left with her parents, two sisters, and three brothers. Lorenzo, later to become a prophet of the church, was very ill during the journey, and Eliza would cradle his head in her arms to soften the jolts of the wagon. The saints suffered worse atrocities in Missouri, culminating with the extermination order of Governor Boggs, inciting the mobs to an all-out attack on Hans Mill and Far West, and forcing an exodus of the Mormons from the state, while their prophet and other leaders were imprisoned and threatened with death on every hand. It was bitter cold when Eliza's family started their journey, and she walked that she might keep her feet from freezing. At one point, during their journey out of Missouri, they discovered all their food frozen through. Not to be daunted by the forces of nature, Eliza soaked the frozen bread in the cow's milk, still warm, and ate it without complaint. When one of the mobbers taunted her, calling out, "Well, I think this will cure you of your faith," Eliza had a prompt reply ready.
"No, sir. It will take more than this to cure me of my faith."
In response to the expulsion from Missouri, Eliza wrote these lines.
"We are far, far away from the land of our home, and like strangers in exile, we're destined to roam. While our foes are exulting to drive us abroad, our faith was unshaken, our hope was in God, though far from home, for we journeyed away from our country and home. We were houseless and homeless, in tempest and storm, yet God was our Father. We leaned on His arm, and beneath His protection, our lives were secure, and we smiled at the hardships we had to endure, while journeying on to a country of strangers, a land not our home. But all those who the kingdom celestial would gain need not parley with danger, with trouble or pain. For if Christ was made perfect through suffering, shall we e'er expect in His presence to reign gloriously, unless we come up through great tribulation to Zion, our home?"
When the prophet Joseph escaped from his long imprisonment in Missouri in April of 1839 and joined his people in Commerce, Illinois, the saints rejoiced. He renamed the spot Nauvoo, meaning a beautiful place or situation. During a few brief years of peace, the people prospered and built up a city unparalleled in the state. Nauvoo boasted doctors, theaters, schools, a university, a trained legion, and hundreds of fine, handsome brick homes and stores. Eliza blessed her friends in a very personal way with her poetic gifts. When there were difficulties, communal or individual, she buoyed them up. When someone suffered loss or sorrow, Eliza was there with comforting words and love. When there was cause to rejoice, her verse sang out the joys of friendship, fellowship, and the blessings of being Latter-day Saints. A tender poem addressed to Eliza Partridge portrays well the use of poetry for comfort and encouragement.
"You know, dear girl, that God is just. He wields almighty power. Fear not His faithfulness to trust in the most trying hour. Though darkness, like the shades of night, should gather round your way, the Lord our God will give you light if you will but obey. In sweet submission humbly wait and see His purpose crowned. He then will make the crooked straight and spread salvation round. Our Heavenly Father knows the best what way we must be tried. Stand still and His salvation test. Thou shalt be satisfied."
This simple little poem embodies a grand, comprehensive witness to the divinity of the gospel restored through the prophet Joseph Smith. A prelude to one of the most sacred experiences of Eliza's life took place in May of 1840. Her brother Lorenzo shared with her an experience he had while studying the scriptures.
"The eyes of my understanding were opened," he later said, and these words came to his mind. "As man now is, God once was. As God now is, man may become."
At the time, Lorenzo related this sacred experience only to his sister, for the two had always shared a close spiritual relationship. However, 3 years later, He was moved to tell the prophet. He recited the words to Joseph, who responded that it was a true doctrine and a revelation from God. During this time, Eliza was saddened to see the faith of her parents weaken and their devotion to the gospel falter. Her own powers and gifts seemed to be flowering and expanding, and she could feel much promise and hope. Of her beloved city of Joseph, Eliza wrote,
"To narrate what transpired within the 7 years in which we built and occupied Nauvoo the Beautiful would fill many volumes. Some of the most important events of my life transpired within that brief term."
The women of the church were officially organized under the priesthood by the prophet Joseph on the 17th of March, 1842. Eliza was called as secretary of the new Relief Society, and one of her duties was to make certain the meetings began and ended on time. She did not own a watch, so Joseph Smith gave her his gold watch to use, later presenting it to her as a gift. On the 27th of June, 1844, Joseph and Hiram were killed by a mob in Carthage, Illinois, and thus the prophet and patriarch sealed their testimonies with their blood. The heartache of the saints was devastating, for they had never truly believed that Joseph could be taken from them. After viewing the bodies of the slain brothers, Eliza wrote,
"What it was for loving wives and children, the loyal heart may feel, but let language keep silence."
4 days following the martyrdom, a poem into which Eliza had poured all the passion and anguish of her soul was printed in the Times and Seasons under date of July 1st, 1844. From the 84-line poem, we quote,
"Ye heavens attend, let all the earth give ear, let gods and seraphs, men and angels hear, the worlds on high, the universe shall know what awful scenes are acted here below. Had nature's self a heart, her heart would bleed at the recital of that horrid deed. For never, since the Son of God was slain, has blood so noble flowed from human vein as that which now on God for vengeance calls from freedom's ground, from Carthage prison walls. Shades of our patriot fathers, can it be, beneath your blood-stained flag of liberty, the firm supporters of our country's cause are butchered while submissive to her laws? Oh, persecution, shall thy purple hand spread utter desolation through the land? Shall freedom's banner be no more unfurled? Has peace, indeed, been taken from the world? Thou God of Jacob, in this trying hour, help us to trust in thy almighty power. We mourn the prophet from whose lips have flowed the words of life thy spirit has bestowed. A depth of thought no human art could reach from time to time, rolled in sublimest speech from the celestial fountain through his mind to purify and elevate mankind. Now Zion mourns. She mourns an earthly head. The prophet and the patriarch are dead. One in their life and one in death, they proved how strong their friendship, how they truly loved. True to their mission, until death they stood, then sealed their testimony with their blood. Ye saints, be still and know that God is just. With steadfast purpose in his promise trust, girded with sackcloth, own his mighty hand, and wait his judgments on this guilty land. The noble martyrs now have gone to move the cause of Zion in the courts above."
Eliza also penned a little-known verse addressed to John Taylor, who was savagely wounded during the attack on the brethren in Carthage Jail. The light touch of tenderness is easy to perceive.
"Thou chieftain of Zion, henceforward thy name will be classed with the martyrs and share in their fame. through ages eternal of thee will be said. With the greatest of prophets he suffered and bled. When the shafts of injustice were pointed at him, when the cup of his suffering was filled to the brim, when his innocent blood was inhumanly shed, you shared his afflictions, and with him you bled. All the scars from your wounds, like the trophies of yore, shall be ensigns of honor till you are no more. And by all generations of thee shall be said, with the best of the prophets in prison he bled.
The Nauvoo Charter was revoked on the 24th of January, 1845, leaving the community without municipal law. The 12 were sustained as the first presidency of the church, and the city, newly named the City of Joseph, went forward under the leadership of the priesthood. The October 1845 conference was held in the temple, with 4,000 saints in attendance. The city was turned into one vast mechanic shop, as Bathsheba Smith observed, with many parlors transformed into paint shops for wagons. Hundreds of the saints were unable to receive their endowments before leaving the city. Brigham called Eliza R. Snow as Nauvoo Temple Recorder. He said of these times,
"I have given myself up entirely to the work of the Lord in the temple, night and day, not taking more than 4 hours sleep, upon an average, per day, and going home but once a week."
During 1845, Eliza lived in a small attic room in the home of Stephen Markham. Joseph was dead, and her dear friend, Zina Huntington, had lost her mother. Pondering these things, as well as the experience Lorenzo had shared with her and the principles the prophet Joseph had taught, she took up the little gold pencil which had been a gift from him. The poem titled My Father in Heaven appeared in the Nauvoo Times and Seasons on the 15th of November, 1845. In a small, secluded physical space, and within the quiet sanctity of her own being, Eliza R. Snow brought forth the consummate expression of her soul. This, her most significant contribution to the saints, has stood from that time forth and throughout the whole history of the last dispensation of the fullness of times.
Thank you.
Eliza's father died in October of 1845, 4 months before Eliza left in the general exodus from Nauvoo. Her mother died during December of 1846. Only Eliza, her sister Leonora, and her brother Lorenzo headed west with Brigham Young and the Saints. Eliza made every preparation she could for the journey. With the last dime she possessed, she purchased a bottle of ink. Ink and pen. As long as she had these, she could record the deepest expressions of her soul. With these, she could continue to fulfill the sacred charge given her by her beloved prophet, to chronicle the experiences of the saints, the history of their faith and struggles, their trials and triumphs, as they continued on in the cause of truth.
Lo, a mighty host of Jacob tented on the western shore of the noble Mississippi, which they had been crossing o'er, at the last day's dawn of winter, bound with frost and wrapped in snow. Hark, the sound is onward, onward, camp of Israel, rise and go. Thickly round the tents are clustered neighboring smokes, together blend. Supper served, the hymns are chanted, and the evening prayers ascend. Last of all, the guards are stationed. Heavens, must guards be serving here? Who would harm these homeless exiles? Camp of Israel, never fear. Where is freedom? Where's justice? Both have from this nation fled, and the blood of martyred prophets must be answered on its head. Therefore to your tents, O Jacob, like our father Abram dwell, God will execute his purpose. Camp of Israel, all is well.
Poets of the Restoration is a program of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.